2 years into the Pentagon efficiency initiatives aimed at finding and eliminating excess spending, efforts that identified $178 billion in five-year cost-cutting, Secretary Gates says there are more savings to be found. But he says they're not in more weapon system cuts. They're in overhead costs, operations and maintenance, and pay and benefits. DOD has saved money on personnel costs through Gates efficiencies and other measures. It's been subject to the government-wide civilian pay freeze, and it's gotten rid of or downgraded hundreds of general officers and senior executives. But now he says it's time for the military and the country's civilian leadership to tackle the politically thorny issues of military pay and benefits.
I think, frankly, that the pressure on the defense budget does provide us an opportunity to tackle some issues that the department has avoided for a long time because they're so politically fraught, and all of these things would require congressional approval.
Gates speaking yesterday at the American Enterprise Institute in what aides say was his last major policy speech before he retires next month. He says part of the examination of personnel issues should be military pay rates themselves.
Part of this analysis will entail going places that have been avoided by politicians in the past. Taking on some of these issues could entail re-examining military compensation levels in light of the fact that apart from the U.S. Army during the worst years of Iraq, all the services have consistently exceeded their recruiting and retention goals. It could mean taking a look at the rigid one-size-fits-all approach to retirement, pay, and pensions left over from the last century. A more tiered and targeted system, one that weights compensation toward the most high-demand and dangerous specialties, could bring down costs while attracting and retaining the high-quality personnel we need.
On health care spending, the military's fastest-growing cost center, according to DOD officials, Gates has asked Congress to allow a $5 per month increase in premiums for working-age retirees,
whose fees are one-tenth those of federal civil servants and have not been raised since 1995.
A compromise version of that proposal appears in the DOD authorization bill that the House will vote on soon. Twice before, Congress has rejected Gates' proposals for increases in the TRICARE program. And on military pensions, Gates says the current system makes little sense.
Depending on which service you're talking about and whether you're talking about enlisted or officers, roughly 70% of the force does not stay for retirement. But somebody who has served for 10 years leaves with nothing. That doesn't make any sense. That's not fair. Another piece of this is we take somebody who's highly skilled, he gets to lieutenant colonel, he has 20 years in. He's reached his period of maximum contribution and value to the department, and we give him every incentive to leave.
Instead of sending those officers home with a pension, Gates says the military should find ways to make use of the decades of training and education they've invested in those service members. Christopher Preble, the director of foreign policy studies at the Cato Institute, says Gates is right to tackle personnel costs, but he's skeptical that Congress will want to take on the third rail issues of military entitlements.
In spite of the fact that there are many, many studies showing how you can reform military pay and benefits that ultimately I think will result in a better quality of life for our troops, the reality is that it's extremely difficult to push through those kinds of changes in Congress, which is why I tend to believe that in order to truly drive down personnel costs, you have to cut in strength, that is, fewer numbers of people in active duty, and then you result in a force that is slightly smaller but perhaps even better compensated than the one we have today. And this is a strategic discussion. It's about, do we want a military that is configured primarily to conduct wars that look like Iraq and Afghanistan in the future, or do we want a military that leverages our technological advantages in the Air Force and the Navy? This is the kind of major strategic debate, discussion, which does hit directly on costs.
Gates also wants the Pentagon to examine the issue of end strength. In fact, he says it will have to if it's going to come up with the $400 billion in national security savings the president has asked for over the next dozen years. But he says those cuts have to be done in a way that avoids across-the-board cuts that he says hollowed out the military in the 1970s and 1990s. Instead, he says, political leaders will have to decide which military capabilities are critical and in which areas they're willing to accept more risk. That's a conversation Gates says he wants to force with a review of defense programs he launched last week.
The overarching goal will be to preserve a U.S. military capable of meeting crucial national security priorities, even if fiscal pressure requires reductions in that force's size. I've said repeatedly that I'd rather have a smaller, superbly capable military than a larger, hollow, less capable one. However, we need to be honest with the President, with the Congress, with the American people, and indeed ourselves, about what those consequences are. That a smaller military, no matter how superb, will be able to go fewer places and be able to do fewer things.
As for finding other savings in the Pentagon budget, Gates says there's plenty more ways to be wrung out of the DoD management structure, even if it doesn't add up to $400 billion. He says he was disappointed with the efficiency reviews weren't able to find more savings in the department's combatant commands, which handle specific geographic areas or functional areas throughout DoD. He says more management efficiencies could also be found in the defense agencies. He says finding savings in those DoD components outside the traditional military services was like going on an Easter egg hunt.
The agencies, field activities, joint headquarters, and support staff functions of the department operate as a semi-feudal system, an amalgam of fiefdoms without centralized mechanisms to allocate resources, track expenditures, and measure results relative to the department's overall priorities. I've always believed inspired leadership can overcome deficient organization charts. But in this case, it may be time to consider new governance structures and arrangements. And here, the Congress has been ahead of the department by pushing us to establish a centralized structure led by a chief management officer.
Gates says the so-called Fourth Estate was only able to identify about $1 billion in five-year savings from a group of organizations that spend at least $64 billion every year. One area Gates says Congress shouldn't look to for savings, though, is more major weapon system cuts. He says the efficiency initiative cut out 30 underperforming or unneeded systems, and there's not much fat left.
The proverbial low-hanging fruit, those weapons and other programs considered most questionable, have not only been plucked, they've been stomped on and crushed. What remains are much-needed capabilities relating to air superiority and mobility, long-range strike, nuclear deterrence, maritime access, space and cyber warfare, ground forces, intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance that our nation's civilian and military leadership deem absolutely critical.
Gates says the review going on right now will try to connect the Pentagon's strategies to the actual military force structures it will need to act on those strategies. He says that analytical work has never been done before. In Washington, Jared Serbu, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.